Hello, Shiver Seekers. Stephanie here. The Dark Oak has unfortunately been hit by the seasonal flu. That's, of course, set us back a little bit in recording. But don't worry, because we've got a fresh Patreon episode to hold you over. We hope to be back next week with a fabulous new case. So take care, friends, and enjoy.
Hello, Shiver Seekers. Are you ready to follow us into the unknown? I'm Cynthia.
And I'm Stephanie. You have found the Dark Oak.
And welcome to our Patreon!
It's a Patreon!
Thank you for joining us over here on our Patreon platform. It's like a special elite club just for our Patreon members. So thanks so much for being a part of that.
Yeah. Our April episode. I love the month of April.
April showers bring May flowers. Is that why?
Maybe. I don't know. I find that April is actually pretty nice here in Florida, though. Normally the showers happen over the summer.
Okay. And see, for me, it's already too hot.
Cynthia's already trying to escape to the mountains.
Yeah. No, I'm over it already. When is February coming back?
I know. I enjoy a light sheen of sweat. I'd much rather do that than be bundled up with blankets all the time.
It's really, well, and what's funny is we're in our studio right now and I'm like, you know, I'm toasty and Stephanie is literally covered up in a blanket.
I have my perma blanket that stays in the pod lab here. It's my little friend.
Yeah. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Cynthia's a little hot blooded.
That's right. I am caliente.
Whoa. Yay, yay, yay.
Well, again, thank you so much for being here, listeners. And today I want to bring you a very, very special case. This case is really close to my heart. We have talked about how, as storytellers, Stephanie and I feel like we get to know each person whose case we cover here at the Dark Oak. But this particular story really takes that to the next level for me. One of our listeners contacted me a while ago and suggested that we present her great-grandmother's case. Geneva Verniel Adams went missing after a night out in 1976, and her great-granddaughter, LaGesta, is a fan of our show.
Hi, LaGesta.
Hey, LaGesta.
I know. Thanks for being part of the Dark Oak family.
Absolutely. So not only do I feel like I know Geneva after researching her, but I feel a real connection with her family. Sadly, LaGesta never got to meet her great-grandmother, but LaGesta's mother, Paula, had very vivid memories of the last time she saw Geneva the weekend before she went missing.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Paula was 14 years old at the time, and I imagine that she must have been interested in cosmetology and things of that nature, because Geneva had asked Paula to teach her how to do her hair and her makeup and her nails.
Oh, like, isn't that sweet?
A really cute bonding moment. Now, sadly, Paula passed away in January of 2022 without ever finding out what really happened to her grandmother on that tragic night. But one thing that we do know is that Geneva was an incredible woman whose story is still being told 48 years after she was last seen, and her family is hoping with everything in them that one day they will finally get the answers that they have been searching for. Geneva was born in Arkansas on December 5th, 1922, but later moved to Missouri, and that's where our story is going to take place, and that's where a lot of LaGesta's family still lives.
Okay, all right, gotcha. That's really cool that she was able to reach out to us all the way in Florida.
I know. It's really interesting to see how many listeners we have all over the world. It's really cool to the world of podcasting.
Yeah. And I know you've communicated to me, you've really enjoyed kind of chatting with LaGesta and how cool that is. I mean, she's in Missouri. I mean, she's out west. And here we are, you know, over in the South.
Florida. Yeah. And we have so much in common. True. Yeah. So true. As an adult, Geneva got married and had 10 children with her husband.
Oh my gosh, Geneva.
I know, right?
She's trying to populate the earth.
She is. In 1969, sadly, her husband died of cancer. So at only 47 years old, Geneva became a widow single mother to 10 children.
Wow.
To support her family, Geneva worked at factories and nursing homes. And that's what she did over the years to take care of her family.
Yeah, she's like a boss lady.
Yeah, she was. Now, Geneva did get married a second time, but I don't know too much about that marriage. It didn't last long. It ultimately ended in divorce. Now, we love strong women here at the Dark Oak. In fact, the name of our production company is Just Us Gals Productions. So we're all about celebrating amazing women, and Geneva was obviously incredible. Geneva worked really hard to take care of her large family. She stayed active in her church. She was very responsible. She was not at all a reckless person. She rarely drank. She didn't go out a lot. But one thing she did really enjoy was dancing. So on July 24th, 1976, 53-year-old Geneva called her daughter Sheila, who was in her 20s, and the two women made plans to go to a bar in the nearby town of Herculaneum. They were just going to cut loose, let their hair down, and have a girls' night out. Now, at this point, Geneva's kids were all grown up and out of the house, except for the two youngest, her sons Steve, who was 17, and Billy, who was 12.
Okay.
Steve remembers this night because he was getting ready to go to work his shift at a local restaurant, and his mom was in such a great mood. He said she was so excited to just go let loose and have some fun. Herculaneum is a small town, and in the 1970s, the population was less than 2,500. Now, Stephanie and I both live in small towns just outside of the Orlando area, so we know that sometimes living in a small town means that the nightlife can be limited.
Literally, the old folks here are still talking about rolling up the streets.
And I think we almost literally do roll them up.
Yeah, rolling up the sidewalk. Maybe that's it. Rolling up the sidewalk. Yeah. If you want to go out to dinner, you better do it before 8.
Stephanie and I recorded all day and went to go have dinner one night and literally could not find an open restaurant at like 8:30 at night.
It was so sad because it was the reward to ourselves for doing great, hard, like grueling work. And then we couldn't find anywhere to eat.
Could not find a restaurant. So we get it. Now, I don't get the impression that there was a ton of dancing establishments in the town of Herculaneum.
I mean, it sounds like a metropolis, so I'm shocked.
There was this one place, though, called the Artesian Lounge. Now, the Artesian Lounge did have a reputation of being a little rough. It attracted a drunk crowd. It was the kind of place, like, it would not be unusual for a bar fight to break out. In fact, just 2 years prior to Geneva's disappearance, one of the owners of the lounge was shot to death inside the club after closing the bar. 41-year-old Louis Hasty was shot in the arm and the head, and he died from his wounds, while a female bartender was sexually assaulted.
Gosh.
And, I know, it's really, yikes. Really scary. Now, thankfully, she was able to escape through a window, and when the police arrived at the scene, they found large amounts of cash missing. So this place is not without, you know, it's
like the Wild West.
A little bit. On our July night, Geneva and Sheila arrived at the Artesian Lounge at some point before midnight. And by all accounts, the women were having a great time. At one point in the evening, Geneva even recognized her son's school bus driver, Jimmy, at the bar. And she spent a lot of the evening chatting and dancing with him. And everyone appeared to be having a blast.
Is this like such a small town thing to happen?
I think so. I didn't read anything that said this was like the only bar in town. But I definitely get the vibe that this is kind of the only bar in town. In fact, I tried looking up the bar to see if it was still open. And it is not. But it appears like throughout the years, it's been like the spot. It's kind of like a staple in Herculaneum history. As the night went on, Sheila got to the point where she was getting pretty tired. She was ready to go home. But Geneva was having such a great time that she really wanted to stay and keep hanging out. So Jimmy, the school bus driver, offered to take Geneva home. And this sounded like a great plan. Sheila could go home and rest. Geneva could stay out dancing. Everybody wins.
I like it.
Unfortunately, no one in Geneva's family would ever see her again.
Oh, that turned quickly.
The next morning when 17-year-old Steve woke up, he immediately felt that something wasn't right. The house was just too quiet. There was no hot breakfast prepared. And most alarmingly, he could not smell coffee brewing. And that was an immediate red flag, because Geneva, first thing she would do every morning was make her coffee.
A woman after my own heart, because my kids would be the same.
I literally have in my notes here, same.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the first thing I do.
Same, especially if she had been out dancing, because she's like, I'm a boss lady. I need to get my day started. I need my cup of joe.
Right. Well, I did not gloss over the fact that there was no hot breakfast prepared, because I thought, she makes hot breakfast?
Like, no, boss lady.
No.
Boss lady.
Like, my kids would be weirded out if there was a hot breakfast.
No, I didn't want the coffee. The breakfast, well, you know, we got bananas.
That's right. So Steve peeked into his mother's bedroom, and he could see that her bed had not been slept in. So Steve called Sheila, his sister Sheila.
Yeah, of course.
And obviously, Sheila was immediately concerned, learning that her mother had never come home.
Especially after she had just seen her and left her in good hands with one of their friends.
Exactly. I mean, anybody in this scenario would be concerned.
Sure.
Now, we've talked about it before. There are some personalities where this would not be unusual behavior. You know, some people are going to go out. They're going to stay out all night, end up crashing on somebody's couch, and their family's going to hear from them that afternoon when they wake up. But we also know that there are other personalities where the idea of not coming home is so foreign that it's an immediate cause for concern. And Geneva fell into that second category.
Sure. Well, she's got those youngins still at home.
Right. Right. So there was no logical reason why Geneva should not have been home. Now, we're in 1976. No cell phones. So the first thing her family could think of doing was calling the bar where Geneva had last been to see if anyone there was able to tell them anything. And Artesian staff did confirm that Geneva had left the bar with Jimmy around 1 a.m., according to the plan. So the next step is obviously to talk to Jimmy, right?
Sure.
Jimmy was a regular at the Artesian. And remember, he's also Billy's bus driver.
Right.
So with this information, Sheila and Steve were able to figure out where Jimmy lived. And I don't know exactly who in the family drove, but that morning, you know, an uncle maybe, but somebody from Geneva's camp drove to his house.
Okay.
And by all accounts, this went smoothly. They had absolutely no problem finding him. In fact, when they arrived at his house, he was outside washing his Cadillac. And Jimmy confirmed that he and Geneva had left the Artesian after it closed, but they'd been having such a great time, they were not ready for the night to end. So they decided to drive to a different bar located in East St. Louis, which was about 40 miles away. Now, the bars in this area had a later closing time than the Herculaneum bars.
That's kind of a long drive, but I mean, I guess I can see if they really weren't done dancing, it's a possibility.
I thought the same thing. I was like, that is a long drive to go somewhere,
you know, in the middle of the night already.
It's already late.
Yeah. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but that seems, you know, seems like an investment of time for sure.
And I also wondered how much later were the bars open, because
if it takes you an hour to get there, have you already burned up that additional open time by just commuting there? Sure.
Right. According to Jimmy, when they got to East St. Louis, the place they had wanted to go was closed. So they just had to turn around and head back towards home.
Well, hopefully they liked each other's company, because they were in the car a long time together.
Which, if you do really enjoy hanging out with a person, like, it doesn't really matter what you're doing, right?
I mean, well, Jimmy is a bus driver, so apparently he was a really good driver.
He doesn't mind driving, and Geneva is just probably enjoying a nice night out. So yeah. I can see this being a pleasant time.
All right.
Jimmy said he dropped Geneva off at a donut shop on Highway 61 in Crystal City around 4 a.m. And he said that was the last he saw her. Now, Crystal City is about a 3-minute drive from Herculaneum. So I assume that this donut shop was probably very near where Geneva lived. I do not know why he took her to a donut shop as opposed to taking her home.
And I assume at this point it's a closed donut shop at 4 a.m.
I honestly do not know. I assume so. Could there be a 24-hour donut shop? Or is a donut shop the kind of like a Starbucks where they're going to open up super early? I mean, I think 4 is like super, super early. But I think like Starbucks opens at like 5, right?
Well, yeah. And here's the deal. it's Herculaneum. It's a super small town. Are they going to have 24-hour donut shops? Is there that much of a demand for donuts that it's going to be open 24 hours? So my thinking is the only explanation I could think that would make sense is if it happened to be open at 4 a.m., which I do find a bit unlikely. It seems strange that she would want to be dropped off there rather than at her home.
Especially when he said, I will take her home.
Right.
He told Sheila, I'll take her home.
Right.
I wish I had the answers to more about the why and was the shop open? I don't.
It could have been a quick cup of coffee or something. I just find, you know, a 4 a.m. drop off at a store that's more than likely closed is a little strange.
It's definitely strange for sure.
Especially when her place was right around the corner.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So Geneva's family, absolutely distraught, immediately filed a missing persons report with the Herculaneum Police Department. Approximately 6 weeks later, on September 4th, 1976, at about 11 p.m., a man walked into a convenience store in Washington Park, Illinois. And this is the same area where Jimmy said that he drove Geneva looking for that bar that was open. So this is the area they drove to, the 40 miles away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Now, this man told the station attendant to call the police because he had just discovered the decomposing body of a nude woman in the woods right beside this convenience store.
Oh, no.
The man then left before the police arrived, which
what
is weird.
That's weird.
I can think of actually a lot of reasons. Maybe he had a warrant out for something completely unrelated to the body he found. I can think of reasons, but
it is maybe he was just on a break from work or something and he had to get back to work. But even at that, I would think you would want to, wouldn't first responders want you to stay there? And so they could at least say, how did you find this body?
Oh, yes. The fact that this person went missing is a problem, but
odd.
I can't say that just because he's the person who reported it, maybe he's responsible for the body. Then again, perhaps he is. We don't know because we don't know who he is.
So literally no identification of this eyewitness at all.
No identification.
Okay. And we're sure he called from that area.
He went in. This man went in, walked into the convenience store.
Okay, and said, I got it.
There is a dead body.
Okay, so it's right not outside. Like he just called and said, hey, I'm at the gas station. Okay.
He walked
into the store. So we definitely know that he was there. He didn't like call it in from a different location. You understand what I'm saying? I see what you're
saying. Yes. No, he was on site at this convenience store saying you need to call the police. There's a body in the woods right next
door. It's not just a weird call. Like you're going to find a body at such and such location, but we don't know where they called from.
Right.
He was actually there at the scene.
Yep.
Okay.
He was there, but left before the police arrived. So this body, this Jane Doe, was taken to Casley Funeral Home in Fairview Heights, Illinois, and an autopsy was conducted. The woman was estimated to be between 25 and 55 years old. So that's quite an age range there, 30 years. She had a petite frame and auburn hair that was pulled into a ponytail. She had dentures as upper teeth. The woman was wearing no jewelry. She had no personal items that were found anywhere near her body. And it was believed that the body had been in the spot where it was found for about 3 weeks.
Not 6 weeks.
Not 6 weeks.
Okay.
3 weeks. Now, unfortunately, this woman's body was so badly decomposed that they were not able to determine a cause of death. But the state pathologist x-ray report did not indicate any gunshot wounds or other obvious marks of violence. So I guess they were kind of semi able to rule out gunshot, things of that nature.
More of a process of elimination.
Yeah. Correct. Sadly, no one was able to identify this woman, so she was buried in an unmarked grave as Jane Doe in Greenwood Cemetery, Lot 77, Grave Number 1, Section B, in Fairview Heights, Illinois.
Oh, that's so tough. I know I covered an entire case just last week, the burning car murders, and I covered it literally just because there's a John Doe that I so desperately want to be identified. So yeah, Jane Doe's and John Doe's really bother me.
It really bothers me too. And honestly, I didn't realize how bothersome it was until I started kind of doing more research into cases like this. And then just to think that someone has lost their life and we don't even know their name, that's heart-wrenching.
Right. I agree. And so somewhere out there, I don't know what's worse, that there's a family grieving that never knows what happens to their loved one, or if literally someone has passed away and nobody is looking for them. You know, I mean, I find like either side of the coin is so painful to think about.
It's awful. It's just awful all the way around, for sure. Now get this. 38 years later. So in 2014, only 10 years ago, an Illinois State Police sergeant was working to identify cold case remains when he ran this Jane Doe's information through a database and got a possible match.
Okay.
Geneva Adams.
Okay.
Geneva's family and police chief, Mark Tilgetsky, were notified of this possible match. And after being given a description and then shown pictures of the body of Jane Doe, Steve, who remember was only 17 when his mother disappeared,
right,
is now 55 years old.
Wow.
And for the first time in all those years, he was positive that he was looking at his mother.
Wow.
Now, I imagine this may have brought maybe some relief to think that maybe they could finally be getting some answers.
Yeah, of course.
It also brought some confusion. How had this connection not been made earlier?
No, I agree. I mean, it's only an hour away. I mean, it's not like we're on opposite sides of the United States.
Right. We have a missing woman and then we have a Jane Doe. Like,
right.
What? Well, Geneva went missing in Missouri and Jane Doe was found in Illinois.
Yeah, this trans-state situation. I mean, we've even seen it within a single state, like different municipalities not speaking to each other, not sharing information.
It's such an issue. And again, this is not my field of expertise, but as a layperson, I just don't understand why it's an issue. I just truly don't. Now, Chief Tilgetsky explained to Dateline that missing person cases were handled differently in the 70s, which, okay. And during that time, there was even less communication between agencies. And we know this is a problem now. So I can see how in the 70s, it may not have been unusual at all to have something like this occur, right?
And that's true. It doesn't make it palatable, though.
Correct. Correct. Now, even after possibly linking Jane Doe to Geneva Adams, it still took another 4 years for investigators to obtain an executive order to exhume Jane Doe's body in an effort to run tests to confirm whether or not she was Geneva Adams.
Right, because there would be no chance of any kind of DNA testing when the body was found.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, finally, Geneva's family felt some hope, right? We may finally get some answers. So with bated breath, Geneva's family waited as investigators dug 4 feet into the plot where Jane Doe was buried. Instead of finding someone's final resting place, the only thing that was found was a single casket handle. The grave was otherwise empty. Jane Doe was not buried there.
I'm sorry, what?
Truly? That's literally all there is to say about that. We, and by we, I mean the general consensus is that this was an error in documentation as to where Jane Doe was actually buried. But I do not have a concrete answer as to why Jane Doe was not where she was.
I mean, so documented, they're thinking, like, the cemetery, like, misplaced her?
Perhaps. Perhaps.
Can anybody be held responsible for that? It just seems so disrespectful, right?
Well, and I have...
I mean, forget the whole point of, like, a family trying to find their loved one. But even if she isn't Geneva, she still deserves the respect of having been buried in a place that's reverent.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. Was it because she was a Jane Doe that maybe care wasn't taken? Was it just a simple clerical error, which is what we're being told? But that's a big error.
I'm sorry. There's nothing simple about misplacing a body.
Right. Well, the idea is that they did bury her in the cemetery, but instead of marking down the correct location, they marked down the wrong location.
Still misplaced.
Right.
But...
But the implication is that she is still buried there. They just don't know where. But my question is, how often does this happen? Like, if we had not gone back.
They're not thinking it's anything, like, more sinister. Like, they didn't use your body for science or something like that. Or are all those still possibilities?
To my knowledge, nobody has said for sure any particular way. I know that the general consensus is that it was just a clerical error. Does that rule out any other possibilities? Truly, I don't know. All I can say is she wasn't where she was reported to have been. And because, out of respect, investigators didn't want to disturb any nearby graves, the digging was stopped.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what are you going to do? Exhume everybody?
Right, right. So Geneva's family was once again left with no answers, no closure, justice.
What a letdown, but also like a shocking letdown. Like, can you, in your wildest dreams on that day when you think your possible loved one is being exhumed, do you ever think that they're going to be like, well, nobody here?
That's why I'm like, okay, if we hadn't attempted to exhume her,
nobody would have ever known.
Even known.
Crazy.
I truly had to stop myself, honestly, to go from going down a rabbit hole. And I landed on, okay, everybody believes it's just a paperwork error. And so that's the most innocent of explanations, but disturbing. Disturbing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you said it a few minutes ago. Like, how often does this happen?
Right. We would have never even known if it weren't for like the circumstances of this case. We would have never have even known. So yeah, that is scary to say the least. Now, Chief Tolgetsky said, quote, I'm 99% sure that Geneva is buried in that cemetery, but without a better lead on where her body is, we just can't dig up the entire area, end quote.
Well, and he's right. Unfortunately, I hate that answer, but he's right.
It's
awful. I hate it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, I would say, well, I mean, no, I guess you can't. You can't just dig up the whole
You can't cemetery. because then it's, you know, you're disturbing someone else.
But
you know,
then is there another grave that is allegedly empty?
Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking. Is there a way to use some kind of like sonar technology, you know, to say like, oh, maybe it's just a few feet over or something like that. Maybe it really is just there, just the markers at a wrong spot or something, you know?
Right. And all of that,
and
I
why was
not
the
know.
Handle there?
There was a casket handle there.
Which is odd, too.
I know. Girl. I know.
That's weird.
It's weird.
So it's not like there was, it's not like it was like virgin soil, if you will, that nothing right. was in there. Something was in there.
But then doesn't that lead you down a whole rabbit hole?
Do you think it was maybe something, okay, this is complete like speculation, but were they like reusing caskets or something like that? It's weird.
That's gross and disgusting.
Gross, like in a irreverent way.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Like yeah. just gross.
To think that somebody could do that with another like human being.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I truly don't know. Now, I asked Legesta, in your heart, do you think that Jane Doe was your great-grandmother? And she said yes. She believes that Jane Doe was her grandmother. Now, sadly, we know that there are an untold number of families who don't know what happened to their loved one who just seemingly vanished. And in February of this year, House Bill 1716 came before a Missouri House committee. And this bill would require that all law enforcement agencies in Missouri participate in the National Missing and Unidentified Person System known as NAMIS. It's a nationwide database of cases of missing persons and unidentified human remains. Each case entry might include physical descriptions or DNA evidence or both. The database was launched in 2007, and the more data is entered, the more open cases of unidentified bodies and missing persons can be advanced and even solved. Many law enforcement agencies still don't enter their information on such cases into that database, and only 12 states require that the agencies within their borders participate. Representative Tricia Burns said of the bill, quote, it's going to create awareness that this tool is available because if everyone participates, the data becomes more reliable. The more states that come on board, the better off the entire country of finding missing persons will be, because we won't have these holes across the country, end quote. NAMIS currently records that there are about 120 unidentified bodies in Missouri alone, but the real number is likely far greater. Representative Burns said, quote, "We don't know what that unidentified person's number will climb to once we all work to one database. We do know that number will go up. We just don't know what it will go to," end quote.
Well, I know you and I have discussed, we're not always fans of technology. By the way, guys, our podcast needs a new mixer if anybody wants to throw us a bone. But we've talked about having to research, you know, what's going to fit best for us. But that part of technology, NAMIS, that I can definitely get behind.
Right? It's amazing. And to me, just so basic. Like, why wouldn't you use it? Why wouldn't? I mean, I know there are money,
extra step, manpower, I'm sure, yeah,
time. I mean, I know the why you wouldn't, but none of them are good enough.
No, it seems like the benefit would far outweigh the cost.
Exactly. And amazingly, data in this system has resulted in connections that span multiple states, like Geneva.
How can it not?
Exactly. For example, a teen girl went missing in St. Louis in 1981, and a Jane Doe was found in Arizona in 1982.
Okay.
And 39 years later, in 2021, this system linked the two. So after nearly 40 years of wondering,
wow,
this girl's family finally learned where their daughter was.
Right. Right.
Geneva's case is a great example of how this system could be really helpful. If the system had been in place in 1976, it is conceivable that authorities could have made the connection between Jane Doe and Geneva quickly. And definitely before poor documentation led to authorities digging up an empty grave.
Yeah, that's the want part of this story for Geneva, unfortunately. That's so incredibly disappointing.
So disappointing. But I will tell you, her family is speaking out. Steve, her son,
yeah,
was a big proponent of this bill being passed. And sure. I have really good news.
Okay.
On March 6, 2024, this bill was passed. So many families are going to avoid even more suffering because of the implementation of this system. Now, unfortunately, I have no further updates in the case of missing Geneva Adams. We still don't know what happened to her on that fateful evening, and we don't know if she is the Jane Doe. However, we do have a pretty strong suspect who is believed to be responsible for her disappearance.
Oh.
So let me tell you the story of another woman, a woman named Cynthia Horan. In July 1985, so 9 years to the month after Geneva went missing, Cynthia lived in an apartment building that shared a kitchen and bathroom with another tenant. And one day, Cynthia's boyfriend tried to pick her up for a date, but Cynthia didn't answer the door. And by the next morning, he still had not heard from her, which didn't make any sense. Her car was still parked in her spot at the apartment, and it was just completely unlike her to just drop all communication. The police were notified. During an investigation, they found her keys were still in the apartment, and her bank accounts appeared to be untouched. A 71-year-old woman who lived on the floor below Cynthia told police that at 1:30 a.m. on the night Cynthia disappeared, she heard what sounded like running in the apartment above her and a woman yelling, "Help, help, help."
Okay. So you're giving me the side eye too, because I'm like, you don't hear that and not call for help. Come on, people.
Well, she just brushed it off.
No, no.
She told herself it was someone just joking around. And get this, Stephanie. She heard the same types of noises 2 hours later and continued to do nothing.
Ha ha ha. You know those crazy neighbors I have. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. We know that our listeners know this. But if you see something, say something.
Yes.
I mean, the amount of times, truly, this is true. The amount of times I've stepped in because I saw a kid crying for their mom while a man walked away with them, and it turned out just to be the father with a kid throwing a temper tantrum. But you know what? I could sleep that night because I did my due diligence just to make sure I wasn't witnessing a kid getting kidnapped.
And any reasonable person is going to understand and is going to be grateful that you tried to help.
Right. And things of that nature. And, you know, does it take some guts? My dad would call it intestinal fortitude. Yes, it does. But you know what? It's worth it. So yeah. If you see something, you say something. Every time.
What's the worst that could happen? You do a welfare check on your neighbor and it turns out they're just doing some weird like role play game. Who knows? But and then they'll be like, oh, sorry. And then it's over. That's right. It.
But how are you going to feel? How does this woman feel knowing that Cynthia went missing and she probably heard something going on and she potentially could have really helped?
Made a difference.
Right. Now, 3 years later, a hiker found a shallow grave containing the skeleton of a young woman, and DNA testing revealed that the remains were Cynthia Horan.
So tragic.
So tragic. Now, after clearing many in connection with Cynthia's death, police do have a number one person of interest, the neighbor with whom Cynthia shared a bathroom and kitchen. This neighbor's name is Jimmy Lee Mills.
Jimmy the bus driver?
Jimmy the bus driver. The same Jimmy Lee Mills who looked Geneva's daughter in the eyes and promised to get her mother home safely after a rare night out.
Jimmy!
The same Jimmy Lee Mills who, when Geneva's family stopped by looking for her the morning after she went missing, remember how he was washing his car?
Okay, I feel queasy.
He was actually using a garden hose to wash inside his trunk.
No, that's not true.
It's true. According to Geneva's family, when they showed up, he was washing the inside of his trunk out with a hose.
I feel so bad for, it was like her kids that went, right? It was Steve?
I don't know exactly who went. I do know that, you know, it's a large family. Obviously, we know 10 children. So I don't know who exactly went, but it was, you know, family members who went and tracked down
Jimmy. It literally makes me nauseous for anybody who had to stand there and look that man in the face.
Right.
Knowing right. He could have been the man, most probably was the man that murdered your mother, sister, grandmother.
And someone you felt safe with. He was her baby's driver. School bus driver.
Oh, no.
This is the same Jimmy Lee Mills who in 1973 was charged with the attempted rape of a 20-year-old woman. And according to reports, he threatened this woman with a hunting knife and a loaded gun. And he was convicted of this crime, but served less than a year in prison.
Okay, so somebody made a mistake there.
This is the same Jimmy Lee Mills, who just 5 weeks before Geneva disappeared, was charged with the rape of a 16-year-old hitchhiker.
Why was he out?
He was out on bail for this crime the night Geneva disappeared.
And nobody thought to, like, investigate this guy right away?
I mean, they did. They questioned him. He said he dropped her off at a donut shop. And here's the thing. He is the number one person of interest.
Well, of course he is now.
But we don't even know where Geneva is. She just went missing. We don't have a body. We don't know where she is.
Oh.
Now, in case you're not infuriated enough, which is a joke because we're steaming mad right now, Jimmy was convicted of this crime, this rape of this 16-year-old hitchhiker. He only served 2 years probation for raping a 16-year-old. And please, let's not forget this man is a school bus driver.
Yeah, I hope he's not anymore, or wasn't, or yeah. I hope he's shamed. Public shame.
Ugh. In 1981, this same Jimmy Lee Mills was convicted of receiving stolen property. And in 1982, he was convicted of escaping confinement. In October of 1985, one of Jimmy's female relatives reported to police that she had been raped by Jimmy after he offered her $50 to have consensual sex and she refused.
Oh my gosh.
Now, this woman later dropped these charges and has not spoken to police or reporters since then. And honestly, I can only imagine what he may have done to cause her to want to drop those charges.
I'd rather not think about that.
In 2010, Mills finally went to prison on a weapons charge. And during his incarceration, Jimmy was interviewed by authorities several times, but he consistently refused to talk about the night Geneva disappeared. He was released in August of 2019. So for all of his crimes, everything he did, he spent 9 years in prison. And his last known address was in Indianapolis. And if he is still alive, he would be in his mid-70s. I'll be honest, I did do a quick search to see if I could track him down, figure out where he was.
Yeah, Google Earth his place.
Right. I didn't find too much, and I didn't really want to know, because then what am I going to do? You know what I mean? So
vigilante justice, Cynthia, that's what we're going to do.
The urge is strong, right? So I'm just leaving it at, if he is still alive, he's in his mid-70s. Police Chief Mark Tolgetsky, who's been assigned to Geneva's case since she went missing, said that Jimmy Mills has always been and is still our number one person of interest in this case. But without a body, we have not been able to charge him.
Right.
Now, LaGesta wrote a letter to Jimmy Mills while he was in prison on that weapons charge because, you know, she was just curious to find out, would he give her any information? But she got no response, which I really think says a lot.
Jimmy, better look out for your soul, man. Somebody knows what you did.
Truth, right?
Yeah.
Truth, right?
You got to answer for that.
We
buddy.
All do.
We all have to answer.
We
for
all
our
end
crimes.
Up answering it for it one way or another.
Yep. Whether on this earth or on the other side.
You got it. Now, Steve, Geneva's son, said that there was one simple thing that the family may still be able to do for his mother. Quote, we could have a funeral service. We've never had a funeral service for her and have that closure. I just think it would be awesome fighting for all these years and finally found her. End quote. At the time of her disappearance, Geneva was described as being approximately 5 feet to 5'2" tall. She weighed between 110 to 120 pounds with reddish brown hair and brown eyes. It is possible she may have had a scar indicative of gallbladder surgery. She was last seen wearing a blue tank top with a design on the front and blue pants made of a thin material. If you have any information about Geneva Adams or the Jane Doe in this case, please contact the Herculaneum Police Department at 636-479-4791. And to Geneva's family, I just want to say thank you so much for letting us share your loved one's story. And we really hope that we did right by her in trying to tell her story and spread awareness. And our thoughts and our prayers are with you.
Absolutely. Now, this month was a little out of order with our Branch of Hope case. So we had to cover Boeing because, guys, what the heck is going on with Boeing? What the heck is going on with Boeing? But our week two case covered our Branch of Hope Foundation options. And we covered the case of Kathleen Fulbig. And in it, again, I'm not going to give away too much of the story because I want you to go and listen to the episode. But there are cases of childhood illnesses. And so because of that, we've decided to pair with the Translational Genomics Research Institute, or TGen, which researches and finds cures, or at least funds cures, for childhood illnesses. So that is the organization we're going to be sponsoring all month. If you would like to donate directly to them, you can find their information on our website or on our social media platforms. You can also join our Patreon, where a portion of your subscription will go to that non-for-profit organization. And you always know that a portion of our proceeds for both the Patreon and sponsors go directly to our sponsored organization. And again, in this case, it is TGen, really good people, really trying to help a lot of people. They work on neurological disorders. They work on infectious diseases. They work on rare childhood cancers. I mean, they're really, truly doing the work. And I feel like by donating to them, we're really going to help a lot of people. And again, once you hear Kathleen Fulbig's case, you will absolutely agree this is something that should kind of be near and dear to all of our hearts. So thank you again for being part of our Patreon. Please tell your friends to be part of our Patreon because you're helping to do good work and you're also getting cool content like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You get to be part of the inner circle. Exactly. You get to feel good about yourself because you're helping to support these nonprofits.
You get to be part of our Dark Oak family, just like LaGesta.
That's right.
Yep. Okay, friends. Well, thank you again for joining us. We will see you next month here on the Patreon. Thanks for listening, Shiver Seekers. You guys rock.
Bye.
This episode of The Dark Oak was created, researched, written, recorded, hosted, edited, published, and marketed by Cynthia and Stephanie of Just Us Gals Productions, and made possible by you, our shiver-seeking listener. Special thanks goes to Justice Himes for our incredible artwork and Ryan Crete for our amazing music.